This is Radio Westenberg Fabrizio. All along, Utah lawmakers knew it would be dicey passing tax reform, but they've also said it had to be done. The nature of the economy has changed over the years. There's plenty of money coming in through income taxes, but sales tax is another thing. Recently, Governor Gary Herbert said sales tax revenue hasn't kept pace with growth since Olean Walker was governor. There's an imbalance, he said, that they urgently need to fix, because even though the state's economy is one of the most stable in the country, lawmakers are worried it's not stable enough. So last year they tried to reform the tax code. It almost happened, but they got more pushback than they expected about the part of the plan that would raise sales taxes. So they spent the summer trying to fine-tune the proposal and sell it to voters. Last month, in a special session, they passed the tax reform overhaul, and we'll get into the details today. But the headline, I guess, is that the reform cuts taxes by some $160 million. But still, it includes those controversial sales tax hikes, or some of them anyway. Now, here's the thing. Legislative leaders had to pass the reform by a two-thirds majority to keep it from being vulnerable to a citizen referendum that could repeal it. At the time, Senate President Stuart Adams was reported to say that he wasn't concerned about the law being repealed by voters. He said they had done the right thing and that he didn't see anybody trying it anyway. Well, someone is trying it, actually. A former state Republican lawmaker, in fact, Fred Cox, is frantically trying to collect enough signatures to put the reform before voters. So today on the program, we're going to be talking about tax reform and the efforts to undo it. Joining us here in the studio is Nicole Nixon. She's a reporter at KUER News. She covers politics and government. And Nicole, welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
Also with us is Lisa Riley Roche. She covers politics for the Deseret News. She was supposed to join us here in the studio, but I don't know if you saw it out there, but it was a blizzard. And so she's going to join us from her home in Salt Lake City this morning. And Lisa, glad you stayed home, I think. It was kind of scary there for a while. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Doug. And thanks for not making me dig my car out of the snow.
Yeah, it was weird. Okay, so let's start with, I guess this is the question. And Lisa, let me start with you. Nicole, sound off on this as well, though. What is the problem, lawmakers and the governor? What are they trying to fix? What's the problem they say they're trying to fix?
Well, I think you touched on it earlier, Doug. The issue is how fast the two sources of state revenue, two major sources of state revenue are growing. That's sales tax and income tax. And the way the state budget is set up, income taxes have to go to education spending. That's in the Utah Constitution and would have to be changed by lawmakers and voters. Almost everything else is largely funded through sales taxes. And here's the crux of the issue. While income taxes are growing at a terrific clip, because as you say, Utah has a strong economy right now, sales tax growth is really lagging. Now, both sources of revenue are growing. So people hear about state surpluses. But lawmakers say the issue is sales taxes aren't growing fast enough to keep up with state needs, and at some point they're going to be in a situation where, yes, there's plenty of income tax revenue, but it can only go to schools, higher and public education, and we don't have enough money for virtually everything else in the state budget, public safety, health care. Again, virtually everything else in the state budget is dependent on growth in sales tax. And that lag in sales tax growth is said to be due to the shift in consumer spending. You mentioned former Governor Walker. It wasn't that long ago that most of the sales tax dollars were collected on the sale of goods. You buy stuff. Well, now we buy a lot of services, and most of those aren't taxed.
So, Nicole, what you're hearing is that I think you've heard it described as a crisis. You've heard it described as a threat. Is there consensus? I know there's not consensus or agreement on just how they went about this, but is there agreement that, in fact, the imbalance does need to be fix.
I think there is. And there's some – I think the disagreement there comes when we talk about the urgency of that. The House Speaker told me a couple days ago that he's seeing the projections show that that sales tax growth – you know, we mentioned it is still growing. It's growing a lot slower than it used to, though. But it will stop being growth in maybe 2 years, and that's when they'll start running out of money to pay for these state services, social services, besides education. So, and then opponents say, well, we're not actually at the edge of the fiscal cliff because the sales tax revenue is still growing. So I think there is a consensus that this is an issue. I think the big disagreement is about how urgent it actually is.
But Lisa, is there a political motive here? We're heading into, of course, a big presidential election year. Any election year seems like an opportunity, certainly for fiscal conservatives, to cut taxes. Is there a political motivation here, as far as you can tell?
I think it's always safe to say there is a political motivation. It may not be the only motivation or the primary motivation, but clearly going back to your constituents and saying, guess what, we gave you a significant tax cut this year. And in this case, it's a $160 million annual tax cut. It'll be more in this first year because of some rebates that are going to go out to voters, again, to remind them that they are going to see an overall tax break if they're in the lower to moderate income brackets. I know talking to legislative leaders last year in the lead up to the special session that passed tax reform, the refrain over and over again was, we need to get this in place by the end of the year so Utahns will start seeing that tax break. Because as you know, when tax rates go down, part of this cut the income tax rate from 4.95% to 4.66%, as well as some other tax breaks. As soon as the tax rate changes, there are new tax tables that will be put in place, so a little less will be withheld from every Utahn's paycheck as a result of this. And that's what legislative leaders were really keen on seeing taxpayers get this year. If it had waited until this session, it probably would not have been in place for the current year earnings on taxes that would be due in 2021.
Talk about, both of you, if you would, what happened to the effort at the legislative session last year, why they did get pushback, why it didn't happen then, and have they changed enough to justify passing it now?
Yes and no. So what happened last year was they wanted to add a tax on services across the board on everything from your home sale to your medical care to your attorney fees to your Netflix and dry cleaning and things. The home sale fees, you know, the realtor fees and the hospital tax and the attorney fees, those were taken out.
Lots of big interests involved in those.
Some argue because, and you did see this on the first hearing of that bill, the room was packed with these really high-powered lobbyists of, you know, these big industries that make a lot of money. Yeah. And what are the services that stayed? Taxes on streamed media and taxes on your dry cleaning and parking and ride sharing. One of the big arguments against this bill is that lawmakers were picking and choosing services to tax. Now, lawmakers say that they actually don't think that those service taxes went far enough, and they actually are talking about adding taxes on additional services sometime in the future. I don't think we'll see that in this legislative session, but they are making that argument that it won't be enough.
So, Lisa, you didn't see maybe there wasn't a powerful enough lobby to protect the interests of low-income people up at the legislature because you see a grocery tax.
Exactly.
Sales tax hike.
It is interesting, the shift in how to solve this problem, right? Governor Herbert, in his previous year's budget recommendations, actually raised this issue of taxing services, widely taxing services, and his idea was to lower the sales tax rate. So even though most Utahns would suddenly have to pay taxes on a wide variety of services that they hadn't had to pay before, it would be a wash because the rate would have gone down. Mm-hmm. Well, lawmakers didn't like the idea of lowering the sales tax rate. It is the source of revenue they're most concerned about. They wanted to see a cut in the income tax rate. And so cobbled together that bill that Nicole described that extended taxes on services pretty widely. And when that failed with a lot of opposition, primarily from the business community, they set up this tax reform task force process. And after months and months and months, they basically came up with two major sources of sales tax revenue. And as you said, that's restoring the full sales tax on food at the state level. It had been reduced down to 1.75%. State sales tax on food, and now that goes up to the full 4.85%. And they're also imposing a type of sales tax now on gasoline sales.
Yeah.
Like the excise tax, it's collected by wholesalers rather than directly at the pump. But I'm pretty sure all of us know that when we go to fill up once this is in place, we'll probably see higher prices.
Yeah. So I guess this raising the taxes on just take fuel, for example. Does this get at why there was some uneasiness among some lawmakers, even Republican lawmakers, because they didn't get to that two-thirds majority? Does this explain that?
I think the food tax was the biggest concern with lawmakers. And Nicole, let me know what you think about that. But that's certainly what I heard over and over again is food is a necessity. I heard it described by some lawmakers on both sides of the aisle as a moral issue.
Yeah.
How do you tax something that people have to have? Lawmakers that supports tax reform would say we're actually doing better by low and moderate income Utahns by giving them this grocery tax credit as part of the income tax side of things. But it's hard for a lot of people to understand how paying more at the grocery store or at the gas pump every day and then getting some kind of a tax break when you file your income taxes, when you're living paycheck to paycheck, really is a better deal.
Yeah, I have two thoughts on the grocery tax. And the first is that there is that, you know, a lot of lawmakers for a few years now have called it a moral issue and actually called for it to be repealed. Most states do not tax groceries. There's not a state sales tax on groceries. Some states, I think Utah is one of a handful, like six or eight, that right now at least taxes food at a lower rate. And I think the minority of states actually have a full state sales tax on groceries. So this is something that isn't very popular across the country to do. The other thing is just what Lisa mentioned, and that's when you're living paycheck to paycheck. I've heard this from a lot of opponents of this of the tax reform bill. You know, that $5 in your pocket means more in that moment than a $50 or $100 or $200 tax credit that you might get once a year.
Let me follow up on that question, because all of this seems to have raised the question of what really does or what really would practically, efficiently help the poor. Republican Senator Todd Weiler has been arguing that the effort to reduce the grocery tax about 10 years ago didn't really help. And the real way, Lisa, you're sort of getting at this, the real way to help those living in poverty is increasing the tax, is, you know, by increasing the tax and creating money to find these programs that, in fact, will help them. What do you make of that argument? Because it seems you're hearing that.
Well, certainly that is the argument in favor of tax reform, right? If you cut sales tax from food, everyone benefits, no matter what your income level is. And by raising it for everyone and then targeting tax breaks to low and moderate income Utahns, the thinking is you can do better by them. You can help them more.
Yeah.
But Nicole said it exactly right for a lot of people, and that is having that money day to day means a lot more than once a year getting a break on your income taxes. You're at the grocery store, you need diapers, you need milk, and you're down to your last $5. What do you buy? People are already in situations where they're close to making those choices, and the concern is this would be the tipping point for a lot of people. They would end up having to cut back on things that are real necessities.
Let's shift to education. What effect this could potentially have on education? The governor said recently there's a misunderstanding about its effects on education. Lisa and Nicole, I think you too have reported the governor recently announced he's recommending, $4.9 billion for public education. That over, the state is, you know, dramatically increasing that over the last few years, that nobody should be worried about the amount of money the state is giving to public education. But put that in perspective for us.
Well, the difference is that the income tax collections have been cut significantly by this tax reform bill, and that's the money that currently is guaranteed to schools. So now education... the education community finds itself more dependent on lawmakers and the governor to make those kinds of decisions, to put that kind of money into schools. The other piece of tax reform that we haven't talked about yet is what was supposed to come up this session, and given the referendum and given the public concern over what's already been passed, it's now a question mark whether it will be dealt with, but that is going in and changing the Utah Constitution to remove that guarantee, and also to identify alternative revenue streams for schools, and that has been described as making it easier for local school districts to raise property tax. So while the state lawmakers want to say they're giving you this big tax break, they may also end up making it easier for your property taxes to go up to help take care of education needs that the state formerly handled.
Let me ask, I want to talk about the referendum effort to repeal all of this. I wonder, what do you make, Nicole, start with you, the prospects of the referendum right now? They have a lot of signatures they have to gather by the end of the month. What are the prospects for that? And how will lawmakers – well, let's start with that, because I want to get to the question of what lawmakers will do if, in fact, something like that does happen.
Right. So they need to gather just under 116,000 verified signatures to be very safe and give themselves sort of a cushion. I think they're trying to aim for closer to 130 or 150, maybe even 160,000 signatures. They have these thresholds based on the amount of active voters who voted in the last – this would be, I think, in the 2018 election. 8% of active voters in each county. They have to meet thresholds in 15 out of the state's 29 counties. There are only about 30,000 signatures that have been verified right now. I know that the referendum folks kind of cringe a bit when we use that metric to report. So it's a long process, and those 30,000 signatures are at the very end of that process. So there are tens of thousands of other signatures that they're gathering now that haven't been turned in, that haven't been verified. So while that 30, 35-ish right now seems low, they say that they have way more, and they're very encouraged by this number. This deadline also is to turn in all their signatures is by the end of the day, next Tuesday, January 21st. And after that, the county clerks have 2 weeks to verify all the signatures and get that to the lieutenant governor's office.
By the end of the month. So it's not even the end of the month they have to.
Yeah,
have to
it's
Tuesday.
Yeah, that wow. That deadline is January 21st. It's coming.
Lisa,
right,
what will lawmakers do if there is a referendum here? I mean, there's been talk lately, of course, that they found workarounds when citizen initiatives or referenda come up.
Well, a referendum is a little bit different than an initiative, because an initiative creates law while a referendum seeks to repeal a law. And so if indeed they do gather enough signatures, and by the way, they told me this morning that they have the numbers they need in 14 mm-hmm. counties and are very close in a few more, but they're not giving out new totals yet of what they say they've collected. They're going to talk about that tomorrow, I guess, at a news conference at the state capitol. But if indeed they do collect enough signatures and the lieutenant governor's office ends up verifying the referendum for the November ballot, and that the lieutenant governor's office actually has until March 16th to go through its verification process. If it gets on the ballot, the law has to be put on hold,
yeah.
and voters will decide in November whether or not they want the tax reform already passed in special session to go forward. So what lawmakers would have to do is revise their budget. They'll have $160 million more overall to spend, but their revenue streams will not be as robust as they feel they are under tax reform. So they will have to go in and put together a budget that can stand either way, depending on what voters do in November. It's going to be quite an overhaul, and again, it would put on hold any of the additional steps in tax reform when it comes to education, and that would leave all of that up in the air as well, what happens going forward with schools.
So we're in the early days of all of this. We won't know for weeks,
probably mid-March,
months,
yeah.
Yeah, until sort of how this is going to play out. Mm-hmm. Okay, Lisa Riley Roach, reporter for the Deseret News, covering politics, joined us from her home in Salt Lake City. Lisa, thanks very much for that.
Thank you.
And Nicole Nixon, reporter, for now anyway, covering politics and government at KUER. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Joining us now on the program is Brad Wilson. He's Utah's Speaker of the House, Republican representative from District 15. He's in Kaysville, joining us by phone today from downtown Salt Lake City, where he's attending an event. And Speaker Wilson, welcome to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be with you.
Let me ask you, one of the things you've talked about is that Utah's quality of life is constantly threatened. I think those were the words you used by this sense of imbalance and instability in these two revenue streams. Talk a little bit about the problem you're trying to fix with this reform.
Yeah, thanks for asking that question. Well, it is a complex problem. You said that a few minutes ago, and this is a complex solution to a complex problem. But at the end of the day, in Utah, we send all of our income tax in one form or fashion to either public education or higher education. And everything else we pay for, which includes transportation, all of our corrections, our mental health services, care for the elderly and the poor, our air quality, our state parks, all of those things are paid for with sales tax. And we spend our money differently than we used to here in the state of Utah. We spend it primarily or much more significantly on medical care and services. And so what used to be about 70% of a household's income was spent on things that generated sales tax. That is now only 40%. And so we're finding ourselves in a situation where in about 2 years, if we don't fix this, what we call structural imbalance, which is fancy budget language, our ability to pay for everything except for education in this state will be in jeopardy.
One of the things you've written recently is that Utahns deserve a return on the growth that they've achieved. What do you mean by that?
Well, great question as well. So we have seen significant increases in income tax revenues over the last decade. And we've invested almost all of that in public and higher education. In fact, we've invested all of that in public and higher education in one form or fashion. But as people's household incomes continue to struggle, we thought it was appropriate that we give them a tax cut. And so what we did is we created about a $160 million tax cut, which primarily goes to those households under $75,000 a year, with a big tax reduction for seniors on their Social Security benefits. And we also helped families with a significant, in fact, the largest dependent exemption in the country, so that working families will pay less in taxes to the state of Utah.
Speaker, correct me if I'm wrong here, but last session, in the attempt to fix this imbalance, you had a long list of services that would have been taxed under the sales tax. You got some pushback. You decided to go back and rework it. That's what we have now. But you stripped out home sales, things like that. You stripped out hospital visits, things like that. So I'm just wondering how you decided to pick and choose, because I'm sure, as you've heard, the contention is the ones you chose to hold harmless on the sales tax increase were the ones that had the more powerful lobby, the more powerful interests. And groceries, people of low income didn't register on that score. How do you react to that?
Well, let me just that's a great question also. Let me just kind of remind you that problem that we've had. We've never taxed medical care in the state of Utah. We've never taxed home sales. We've never taxed when you go to get your will done with your attorney as you pass away, or we've never taxed your funeral service. What has happened, though, is people have moved more to spending their money on services and experiences and less on products. And so what we did, and it was the ideological lens we used, was how do we go in and scoop up services that have displaced products over the last few decades? And primarily that's what we did. So now, you, instead of going to the store and buying a CD, you'll pay sales tax as you stream your music, for example.
It's a way to deal with the changing nature of the economy.
Yeah, consumption patterns are changing. We spend our money differently, but we still have to build roads and pay for the courts and the highway patrol and pay for the kinds of services that we – social services is the largest part of the state budget. It's how we take care of the elderly, the sick, the poor, the mentally ill, how we take care of that group. And that's actually the biggest budget that's in jeopardy if this referendum passes.
Why is it so important to tax – groceries?
Well, there's a lot of different ways that we could have solved this problem. And what we ended up doing at the end of the day was creating a program where individuals will pay sales tax on their groceries. But those that are at the lower income thresholds that make less money, especially those under $30,000 or $40,000 a year, by the time they get the earned income tax credit that this bill has in it, as well as a grocery credit, and they get the exemptions restored to them, they're going to be the biggest recipients of tax reduction as a percent of their income of everyone in the state. So folks that are making, like you, Doug, lots of money, you're gonna pay sales tax on your groceries, and you're probably not gonna get that grocery credit. But you're going to get income tax reductions as well. 90% of Utah households will end up paying less money to the state of Utah when this, this year.
I know that Speaker, the way you talk, there is a sense of urgency that you have in mind. I guess, why pass the measure in December? As you know, supporters of the referendum to repeal it all say that one of the reasons you did that during the holiday season, for example, was to sort of tamp down the signature gathering efforts. Was there any sort of strategic effort there? I want you to respond to that.
They're giving me a lot more credit than I deserve, if that's what they think. No, it was actually much different than that. It was really important to us that we get dollars back in the pockets of Utahns in 2020. And if we'd waited until the general session, our ability to reduce income tax rates and have the withholding tables adjusted so your paychecks went up wouldn't have been able to happen. We have a $60 million rebate program that will be going out in probably April and May, that if we'd waited until the session starts here in a few weeks, wouldn't have been able to go out until April or May of 2021. And so you asked a few minutes ago about returning a dividend to Utah families and Utah citizens on the great work that they've done. It was important to me, and I think my legislative colleagues, to pay that dividend this year instead of a year from now.
One of the things that the governor has said is that this particular piece of reform legislation isn't exactly where he wanted it to be, but called it a first step. I know a lot of lawmakers have said it's not perfect. You seem to acknowledge this as well. What would the next step be in tax reform for you?
Well, I don't see anything on the horizon in any kind of big policy shifts in the next few years. I think what we've done with this is not only have we implemented the second largest tax cut in state history, but we've also shored up our ability to pay our bills for a decade, maybe a decade and a half at least. We'll see. And the world is changing fast. Yes, I mean, we have every year bills in the legislative session that address tax policy to help adjust to the economy that we're in. But these big tax changes that occur probably only occur every decade or decade and a half.
Are you what do you figure are the chances of this referendum? I'm not sure how much you're sort of following the effort at all, but what do you make, just how are you reacting to that, and what sort of chances do you give it if you think about it?
Well, I'm not going to prognosticate on the likelihood of its success, just because I don't, you know, I don't have the information to make an accurate guess. But I think that the only thing that I would say that's been kind of interesting for me is as I've actually gone into the grocery store, it's been a little disheartening at times to see that folks are not understanding when they're signing that referendum that they're actually signing something that will raise their taxes overall. They will be sending $160 million more to the state capitol for the legislature to do something with. And Family Four probably sending about $500 more down to the state capitol if this referendum succeeds. And my assumption is, and this is a true belief of mine, Doug, that money is better in the hands of my neighbors and my family than it is in my hands as a lawmaker. And I'd rather them spend it on the things they want and need in their life than send it to me and let me decide what to do with it. And unfortunately, that is not being shared with people when they sign this. They think they're going in and signing to just get rid of the sales tax on groceries. That's not what they're doing. They're raising their taxes, and they'll be sending a lot more money down to the state capitol if they sign this.
Speaker, one final question. I know you've heard the contention that lawmakers have in some cases acted against the will of voters, certainly in these voter initiatives. The medical marijuana one, is one that comes to mind. And there have been concerns that you'll try to find a workaround. Now, a referendum is different from an initiative, I know, but what would you do, let's say, if that referendum passed? Would you, because I guess technically you could just pass it again, I suppose. What do you even, have you thought that far in advance, I guess?
Well, so I think that it is easy to say that lawmakers do or don't do certain things. But the truth is we really do our best every day as we study in-depth issues like this. We study this for over a year to try to find what we thought was best for the citizens of Utah and for the state's health. And this is so complex. Like, I'm looking at the Cliff Notes version of this bill, right, sitting here in front of me. It's 9 pages long. And the only reason it's 9 pages long is it's a really complex problem we're solving, right? And so that's the, you know, tug and pull of this process is lawmakers study issues at depth. There are times we're not public relations experts, unfortunately. We don't get our message out as well as we would like. But at the end of the day, we're trying to do what we think is best for the state's future. And so when we have initiatives or referendums, if you go back and look, by and large, there have been adjustments to the policy areas. But we have tried to be responsive, and we'll continue to do that. We engage with constituents every day. And most of the bills that we run during the legislative session that starts in a little bit over a week, most of those bills come from constituents that have a problem that they're asking us to fix for them.
It's Brad Wilson. He's the Speaker of the Utah House of Representatives. He represents District 15 in Kaysville. Mr. Speaker, grateful that you could spend some time with us. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Today in the program, we've been looking at the new tax reform package passed by the Utah legislature last month. It includes a tax cut, a big tax cut, $160 million, one of the biggest ever passed in the state. Most Utahns will end up paying $500 less per year in taxes, but not everyone is on board with this. There's a grassroots effort to repeal the tax package, and those who don't want it to go into effect are worried about its impact on school funding across the state, on the poor, because of the reforms, including a tax sales hike for services like groceries, for example. Joining us now on the program is Marcy Campbell. She's a volunteer for the referendum effort to repeal the tax reform package, and she's joining us here in the studio. And welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Are you feeling frantic? You've got a lot of signatures you've got to get before.
We have a lot of signatures to get, but we already have gotten so many. We have an internal system of collecting the data of packets that have been turned in. So we are tracking the best that we can where we're at county by county, and we feel like we're in a really good position to be able to do this.
What's the sense that you're getting? I mean, lawmakers themselves couldn't pass this by, and it's an overwhelmingly Republican legislature. They weren't able to get the two-thirds. What does that tell you about the kind of sense of maybe dissent that you're hearing among citizens and others?
Exactly. I think that the message that we see from the public, so I've been training people up and down the Wasatch Front and beyond since Christmas Day when I received the box of my first box of packets. And the dissent across the state, I would say, varies, but the biggest concern, I think the number one concern for people is the sales tax on food. There's a very visceral negative reaction regarding that. And many people will say, you know, it may not impact me and my family. I can afford it. But I just don't feel good about doing that to the people that are trying to survive day to day.
What does that tell you about people and voters?
I think this has been an amazing, I would almost call it a miraculous effort of what I've been witnessing of the humanity of Utahns across the state. The thing that's been the most remarkable and exciting for me has been watching people unite in one cause and one effort. So I know that some people have been frustrated because they want to say, they've asked me the question, what is it that you're doing to talk people in to signing this referendum? And the reality is we haven't had to talk anybody into it. They are listening. They're paying attention. They have read what they needed to read, and they're coming to sign for different reasons. We have Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents, and so they may not all agree on why, except I would say probably everybody agrees on the food tax, but they feel like it's not the right direction for the state of Utah.
You heard the speaker there. He said that when he sees people signing that referendum, he's disappointed because what they may not be realizing, or maybe they are, is that they're essentially saying, here, take this $160 million and keep it. How do you respond to that?
I think that's a good selling point, but my question is, why is it that you need to sell something to so many individuals across the state of Utah? If that was a reality, we wouldn't be having the reaction that we're having and going to so much effort that we had to sacrifice our holiday to do. We've been sacrificing our jobs. Our families have been sacrificing. And we're talking about in the thousands of volunteers that are doing this to make this happen.
I want to ask you about that, actually. So it is one of the questions I put to the speaker. Like, why did you do this in December? Why did you do it around the holiday time? And I won't get you to maybe question his motives, because he said that you're giving him – people are giving him too much credit if they think that was a strategic attempt to tamp down this effort. But can I just ask you, what do you make of that?
I agree with you. I don't want to say that I know all the back-end reasoning behind it, but I will ask a follow-up question, which would be, if you wanted it passed before this legislative session and you were aware that this was on the docket all of 2019, why didn't you have a special legislative session in November, October, September? There were other months, the summer, there were other months that this could have happened. Why right before Christmas? That's my only response.
Yeah. In our conversation with Lisa Riley Roach and Nicole Nixon, we were talking about the effort during the legislative session last year. and that there were a lot of services that were going to be taxed, and they teased out some, left others.
Yes.
The ones they left, of course, groceries, but there were others that had, as was put by these reporters, you know, big interest lobbyists there.
Correct.
To speak for them. Talk a little bit about what you observed in that process.
I think that's a very great question. My personal opinion is that the state of Utah was founded upon and continues to be a state that the very fabric of the way we work here is small business, entrepreneurship. And these small business owners are the ones that are so concerned about completely changing the fabric of their industry and them having to become tax collectors. Now, I realize they took many of the services off the docket, I think, to be able to include some services in this law. But what I'm hearing from the state, the citizens of the state, is we know they'll just slide all the other ones in really fast. Boom, boom, boom. Once you've introduced a new type of taxation, we believe they're going to just start including all of them, except those that have a financial capacity to lobby against their industry.
I wonder what you make of the idea that this is an imbalance. Do you agree, I guess, is how I'll put it. Do you agree there's an imbalance here, that there's an economic instability? They need to fix this because the nature of the economy is, in fact, changing. Are you on board with that idea anyway?
So I don't feel like I've been convinced of it yet. I don't want to say absolutely not. I just don't feel like I'm completely convinced of it, because what I'm hearing the politicians say is, or even the ad campaigns, that we need money for the children, for education. You're going to be hurting education on one hand. But on the other hand, they say, look, we have all this surplus money in education that comes from income tax. And so my confusion is, why am I not getting the disconnect, the incongruence between those two representations?
So I guess, have you thought about, if you don't fix it this way, the imbalance, how do you do it? How do you hold groceries, for example, harmless? How do you deal with the questions that people are having about education funding? Like, how do you fix it? Are you thinking, that's not really my job? How are you thinking about that?
I think that's a fantastic question. What I will say, I want to be, in some respects, the reason I'm here is I'm just a citizen of the state of Utah. I'm a volunteer. This whole effort is volunteer. No paid. No one's being paid, et cetera. So I want to represent the best that I can, the people that have been giving me feedback in addition to my own opinion. So the feedback that I've been given is, and this one is my personal opinion, I think there's a more efficient way of taxation that is not what Marcy Campbell says, the slippery slidey way, where there's a little money here and it slides over there and then we swish over here and then we have a new government program over here and then we're going to do this over here and then it becomes more difficult to track where the money is going. And so I think people are very concerned about that, that it's so complicated and that we aren't going to be able to track it if we continue with this law. And we realize other states already have these very complicated tax laws, and we can see where that took those states, the direction that it took those states down the road. And we're saying, we don't want to change Utah. We really like Utah. We want it to be the way it is. We need to find a more efficient way to make that happen. And of course, by and large, the public is going to say, cut spending. This is a monstrous budget that was just presented to us. Where are you giving evidence of cutting the spending? I think that's probably the biggest feedback that I'm getting from most people. And I think it's really important to note, very few people have said that they are a no-tax type person. Very few people. Most people will say, I believe in taxes. We need taxes. I don't have a problem paying my fair share of taxes. But I want our legislators to know we're paying attention. We gave you feedback in 2019 and even in 2018 when they did not vote for the gas tax increase. And they feel like their voice is not being heard. And that, I think, collectively across all boards is why people are coming out to say, I want my voice heard. We went to those town hall meetings. We feel like we were not heard.
Do you think there's a disconnect? I find myself asking this question a lot because it comes up that there's a difference in just in the political ideology or the political philosophy of mainstream rank and file Utahns and the people who serve them in the legislature or in public office. Do you think there's a kind of a disconnect there? That not that the rank and file are necessarily more ideologically liberal or progressive necessarily, but they might be more inclined to not put a sales tax on groceries, for example. Have you detected that as you're going around talking to people?
So I guess that's what I was describing in terms of they feel like their voice isn't heard. So I don't know that they've used the word disconnected. Yeah. I would agree with you in that way.
I guess the question is, are there lawmakers more conservative than they are?
Well, again, with this referendum, we have a lot of different people with a lot of different ideologies. So it's not a collective group that has the same exact ideology.
Yeah.
The only thing that we have in common that has brought us together in remarkable unity is that we don't feel like this is the solution. We want to give you another chance, legislators. Take some more time, look into it more, and maybe talk a little bit more, really, truly talk a little bit more with the way that people live day to day. For instance, I'm a single mom, lots of years. I have been remarkably poor as a person, going to school, scraping, etc. So I know what it's like to be very poor and what it's like to live day to day. I know what that feels like. And prior to being a single mom, I know what it's like to be middle class and be okay and not have to worry about those things. So I have a perspective, and having owned businesses, et cetera. So I have a perspective of a wide range, and I understand. And I think that might be the disconnect. The disconnect most evidence to me in the food sales tax is the idea that people who are just trying to survive every day are going to even know to even go try to figure out how to fill out a form to try to get a rebate check or a prebate check, and then they'll get that money, and they're trying to survive every day. They just need to be able to eat and feed their families every day. And so there's a really big disconnect in trying to sell the idea of a rebate check for people who aren't ever going to know how to even get it. And they have said, well, we've devoted $500,000 to provide for people to help them fill out those forms. But the reality is, why are we establishing a new government program and funding it with the taxes that you're taking out of the food tax for the people so that they can go fill out a form? It just seems like let's just not take the tax to begin with on the food.
What's your day like? What have your days been like since Christmas, I guess?
Since doing this?
Yeah.
That's such a great question. So you're getting to hear tired Marcy voice today. And every day that I do this, my voice is getting lower and lower because there are many of us that are working on 3-4 hours of sleep. You can imagine the remarkable efforts to be collaborative on a state that's as wide and vast as this state and volunteers, right? So obviously this could never have been done without the amazing people stepping it up all over the state, sacrificing to do this. And we don't just do this haphazardly, like, oh, this is so fun for all of us. This is, people feel very strongly about this.
You going to make it? The numbers?
You know it. You know we are.
No, be realistic.
I am telling you in all honesty, I really, truly believe we are. Right now we have 5,000 packets that have 49 signatures each already in the hands of Utahns all over the state. 5,000. So you do the math. That would take an awful lot of people who went through training to be a signature witness. You have to be trained to do it. And then they've signed that they're willing to go take this and manage it, right? So life happens, and maybe some people aren't going to be able to, but that's a lot of packets that would have to go by the wayside. And we just printed 1,000 more to do the grocery stores that we've worked in collaboration with for this last little bit.
Tired but confident.
Oh, tired but working really hard. So you go, volunteers.
It's Marcy Campbell, volunteer for the tax reform referendum effort. Thank you very much for coming up.
Thank you.
Radio West, a production of KUER. Natu Twe is our intern. The show produced by Benjamin Bombard, Ellie Vallarta, and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.